Yo, 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 welcome to Crate 808, and today we continue our series discussing which 90s rap act had the greatest three album run, and today it's going to be about one of the biggest rappers ever, Redman. And with me to break down this incredibly funky body of work is one of my favourite crews in the rap podcast world. All the way from South Florida, we've got the Take It Personal Radio Squad in their house. Jason Gloss, aka Phil of Flavor, DJ 360, Aaron Wade, and Kevlar. How are you boys doing, man?
Yeah, man.
What up?
What's up, Cam?
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for that great intro, man. Happy to be here. Thank you.
That's the first time Kev haven't had to do an intro. He was actually introed.
I'm usually the intro guy. I do the intro, I say my two sentences, and then I fucking leave and let these smart guys do all the work.
I might do that today. I might just take a leaf out of your book, though. Just like, I'll chip, get some chips, and then come back. And then good stuff, man. But no, big fan. Jason, you've been on before. We talked Gangstar a while back. Went down well there, Jason. I think even Primo enjoyed that episode. He even put it on his Instagram, and I was really enjoyed that.
That was very cool.
Yeah,
very
cool. Man. But today, it's Redman. We are going to talk about his three-album run. We've done Q, Pac, De La Soul, Tribe. All these will be talked about. All you guys out there, go check that out. But today, we're talking about 92's What The Album, 94's There Is A Dark Side, and 96's Muddy Waters. This run, guys, it's serious. It's a serious run.
I think all of us have been listening to Redman for the past month, you know, when we initially discussed this. And I know when you had brought this idea to us, I was kind of like, oh man, can we get Tribe or can we get Cube? Because those would be easier sells. You know, I think when it comes down to it, Ice Cube's first two albums are two top 10 albums and the body of work speaks for itself. But the more I've kind of listened to the Redman catalog and I really thought about it, at least coming from my point of view, it's hard to really compare a solo artist to a group. Like we wouldn't compare Bobby Brown and New Edition or John Lennon to the Beatles. So for this particular competition you have, I'm going to separate the groups from the solo artists, right?
That's all good, man.
For the groups, and I've been listening to all the episodes that you've dropped. I listen to all your episodes, but especially I've listened to the De La and the Pac. I would say without a doubt, it's got to be Tribe for a group. Mainly because, not because of their debut, that's a classic, but Midnight Marauders and Low End Theory are two flawless albums. And I don't know if any other group has an album as important, as timeless, and as perfect as, say, Midnight Marauders and Low End Theory. And as much as I love Gangstar, look, we named our show Gangstar, or Outkast, or even Mobb Deep. I don't know if you're listening to murder music the way you would listen to Midnight Marauders today. So that's why I think, as far as groups go, Tribe takes it.
With that being said, Jay, like a trial, it's never what you say, it's how you say it. So I can make the argument and we can win any day of the week here.
So as far as the solo artists go, I believe you have Cube, Tupac, and Redman. So we heard the Tupac show, and I love Tupac. Me Against the World is top 10 album for me personally. Love it. It's my favorite Tupac album. And I know a lot of people probably prefer the first two albums maybe over the last two in that run. But I think Me Against the World had some filler, and I think All Eyes on Me was more of an emotional album. We lost Pac. We wanted to hear music from Pac, but it wasn't the same as, say, Me Against the World or All Eyes on Me. It didn't hit the same. So we're throwing Tupac away. Now we got Redman versus Ice Cube. We all know here it's an extremely, extremely difficult task to compare the two. One, Redman hasn't really put out a lot of music in recent years, at least music worthy of listening to. Now, I'm not saying Cube has, but Cube is definitely more relevant. His early body of work, when you factor in NWA, when you factor in his debut and the EP, and then it goes on and on, even up to maybe say Lethal Injection. Magnificent run. First two albums, top 10 albums. Can't dispute that. So here's my take on why Redman had the best run.
Let's go.
When you chop up the three albums, they're all equally as great. Muddy Waters is just as great as What The Album or Dare Is A Dark Side. Now, we may all have personal favorites, like Dare Is A Dark Side, I think, is our favorites. But those albums are equally as great. And I think that's the separation between Cube and Redman. Redman has three albums to me that, whether you had Muddy Waters as the debut or What The Album as the third album, There's no shuffling. They're all equal. The Predator is a very good album.
You want to call it stretching there. You're stretching there.
You could call it a classic. I'm not going to be mad for people to call it, but it did not at all compare to Death Certificate and America's Most Wanted.
Not even there, close.
There's like different levels. This is top tier for America's Most with the Bomb Squad and Sir Jinx and crew for Death Certificate right there. 1A and 1B. But then here's the Predator.
And so what about Kill It Will, man?
Well, but it's EP. An EP. So we don't really count that for an album.
Yeah. Okay.
But,
all right. Fair enough.
So the Predator, while it was good and had a lot of joints that we liked, and we liked him working with Muggs and all that stuff, it's not the equal to the other two. Redman has three albums that are all equal to one another. Mm. So I think the consistency is there. Also, Redman, and I'll let the other guys chime in. To me, he is like a unique character in hip hop. Like there's the Pharoah Monches and the MF Dooms, and there's the Redmans. He's like the Jimi Hendrix of hip hop. There's never been a Redman. There's been people that try to emulate Redman, maybe, you know, a few here and there, but there's only one Redman. He's charismatic. He's one of the greatest lyricists, great storyteller, extremely witty. So I think that is what makes him so special. And because he didn't have a very strong second part of his career, a lot of people tend to forget about Redman. And a lot of the new generation, they're not really familiar with Redman, with the exception of maybe some of the movies or MTV Cribs and stuff like that. But as a lyricist, as a rapper, Redman should definitely be within everyone's top 10, simply off the three albums that we're going to discuss today.
Damn, yeah. Top 10. I think, Jay, what you really got to realize is not a lot of those records that you guys are already talking about had three records so close together. You know, Tribe, I don't know how long between each record. I mean, it was pretty significant, but you know, we're talking about, first of all, he was introduced in 1990 off EPMD, right? So his first record, I believe, was 92. So
he's hardcore.
Hardcore, yeah, so, and Brother Was on My Jock, and then Headbanger was 92.
I think that was 1990, wasn't it?
Hardcore was 1990.
Ninety was hardcore. But you know, first of all, 1992, what starts off real strong, and it lets you really know what Reggie's all about. Time for Some Action, which, by the way, is probably Kid Capri's favorite back-to-back beat juggle. I think that was on Def Comedy Jam and a few other things, but he always killed that, and that became like an iconic thing for all the DJs. That's one, but a really strong way to introduce his album to the world, you know, with that first song. Even though this album had some elements of EPMD, it's really his own lane. And, you know, let's just break down the commercial success of just this first record. You got Tonight's the Night, Blow Your Mind, Time for Some Action, How to Roll a Blunt, all very commercial, vibey kind of tracks that also go against other parts of the record, which is much more hardcore, much more rugged. And of course, you had more tracks like Rated R. That is so slept on. Rated R is like one of the greatest tracks off that first record.
Yeah.
So Rough was good. You know, you have all those little skits that go in between. You know, not a lot of East Coast artists did that. You could almost think like Dr. Dre helped produce this record. You know, it had all those little innuendos, all those little nuances. And for an East Coast artist, that really was not popular. And, you know, it also had Eric Sermon and Pete Rock, you know, doing a little bit of production. But first album's a guaranteed classic. I mean, whether you want to believe it or not, for a guy who really came out of nowhere and was repping New Jersey, he really started setting his own lane. I don't know if you guys want to go like album for album.
I'd love to go into each album as we go. But as you're talking about what, I mean, because we have a lot of people of different ages come into this. If you could tell me just on a personal level, the hype around Redman before this dropped, because I know we talked about Headbanger and that was out, and obviously the other stuff he'd done before with Hardcore. When you guys came to this album first, what was that like for you guys? Like, how did that differentiate itself from everything else out in 92?
Started with Hardcore, I think, because that was the standout verse of the song. People wanted to hear more. It was kind of like Nas on Live at the Barbecue, I think, as an introductory verse. You wanted more. And then what really did it for me was the Blow Your Mind video on The Box. Because back then, The Box was a big deal. People would call in and request videos. And his was in high rotation because the video was hype. That song gave you what you were hoping for, in my opinion. After you heard Hardcore, you wanted to hear something like that. And he's kind of an innovator. He's one of the first weed guys. I mean, it was Cypress Hill and him. He was before The Chronic. This album came out 3 months before The Chronic. So he's one of the first weed guys and having fun with it. He's one of the first guys to rep New Jersey. He came out before the Artifacts. He came out before Low Tug. So he was one of the first guys to really embrace New Jersey. And here's the funny thing about What the Album. When you listen to it, it's so funkadelic and so funk heavy. Mm-hmm. You can't tell where he's from. And a lot of people, he said this in our interview, people think I'm from the West Coast.
Yeah.
Because the whole first album is funk. But the thing I like about it, you can tell it's real heavy Eric Sermon. And then on the second one, he was left alone in the studio a lot.
It's all Redman.
Yeah, he did his own thing. But I really like that he progressed beyond just leaning on Eric Sermon, because like the first, a lot of the songs sound alike, which is one of the only beefs you can come up with on a really strong, strong album. What the Album is, a lot of the songs sound alike because they had that Eric Sermon signature funk sound. And it was kind of like Daz Effects. Like a lot of those songs sounded like on the very first album, but he continued to progress on each album without taking any steps backward.
But he did progress and he started his own lane. I mean, I think we can all agree Dara's A Dark Side is by far our favorite out of all of these three records. Mm-hmm. It was like, for me, best out of the trilogy. He changes it up. He makes it, he almost makes you feel like the album continues because the first song.
You have a thesis on Redman you want to get out of the way right now?
No.
No. You're jumping.
He was just talking about Dare. So that's what I was just trying to say. He was going into it.
Yeah, but you're going into the Dare setup. Poor Kev, as he talked about. It's like, fuck you, Kev. What do you have to say about what? That doesn't matter.
I was too busy getting high, so I couldn't even tell what song was what, because as Aaron Wade said, man, they all sounded so similar. But
yeah.
However, Time for Some Action is one of those perfect songs, in my opinion. You know, you got like Mind's Playing Tricks on Me. You Absolutely. Have MC8, Menace to Society track. That's like another one straight of my favorite menace. Songs. Yeah, Straight Up Menace. Redman, Time for Some Action. It's a perfect song, dude. It's Mm-mm. a fucking perfect song. And not only that, but I share the same opinion as Wade, where what the album does sound very similar track for track. However, Time for Some Action is just on a whole other level. And that's actually when I was really first introduced to Redman, because I kind of came into the hip hop game a little late, and I used to be spoon fed by like Yo MTV Raps or by fucking radio and shit, dude. So when I heard Time for Some Action and the buzz that it was getting, dude, it got me all excited and hyped. And then I just fucking ate that shit up. Right.
Yeah.
What a perfect song to start off an album. That's a perfect song to start an album. And he had like every other song was an absolute banger. Like, holy shit. Rated R, Watch Your Nuggets.
Watch Your Nuggets, yeah.
That shit was raw, man. Blow Your Mind, super dope first single.
The Blow Your Mind was the first single, which is kind of crazy because I think Def Jam wanted to kind of ease him into it with some kind of radio joint. But when Time for Some Action came out, it changed everything. It was right. The perfect time. It featured Cypress, who was at the peak of their career. And like Kev said, it's a perfect song. If you have a list of like perfection, this is the epitome of it. And to go back to your question about the whole debut and what your thoughts were, when I heard Hardcore, I think it was kind of like the feeling that many of us had when we heard AZ on Life's a Bitch. Like, you're like, all right, who is this guy? He stole the show. I need an album of his. So a few years later in 92, when it came out, I think so many of us were like, okay, this guy's completely different from what we're expecting. And even though it was his debut and he's an East Coast artist and it was heavily influenced by like P-Funk, it kind of reminded me of Ice Cube's debut in a sense. I know it was produced by the Bomb Squad, but the way the songs, the sequencing and the fun that it has and the skits, you know, when you put it like that, it was similar in that regard. It was a strong, strong debut.
And it was really well sequenced.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm with you there on Dare as a Dark Side is my favorite Redman album as well. So we're kind of making a full deck here. But the sequencing on that is as good, I would say. One thing I was going to just touch on when you're saying that about Red, because I came to Red before I really got into EPMD. So I'm not sure if you guys were into Eric Sermon and Parrish before, and then Red came along. I was going the other way. So this is the first time I'd really, really ever heard something so hard, like it's Time for That Smooth, fucking hard, but over smooth funk. Like there is smoothy, like funk breaks on here where I'm like, wow, this is just a mix. Like he can do a lot. He's such a character. He even even the comedy aspects. You talked about the skits. The man knows how to like make a skit work. And I feel the comedy aspect was another thing I'd not heard enough, where someone was just like, you know, talking about Rodney, was it, no, where Don King's like hair, and talking about like, you know, he's doing some random references. And I'm just like, wow, this, so that for me as well, the comedy aspect of it, although he talks about how grimy everything is in his life, the fact he span it like that, I was like, damn, I'd never, and I suppose that's where M comes from, and his legacy is huge, like in that aspect as well.
I feel like he was an innovator and one of the first guys to do the character thing. I mean, you got like four different names. You're not sure who it is on this one. It's like a hardcore Humpty Hump.
Yeah. Well, that's a great way of putting it, man. That's a great way of putting
something like
it.
That.
Red Man meets Reggie. That's another time when I was like, hold on, he's rapping to himself. I know Slick's done it and I know Snoop had done it as well, but it was just different when Red Man did it. I was like, this is just, again, he shows what he can do. By the way, also talking about how wild it is for a debut, what the track I'm Bad, when he just jumps and does a house like break in the middle. I'd not heard like De La Soul do stuff like that at the time. So this was again an intro for me where I was like, this guy's just wilded out. So I like that breakdown of the first album. I agree with your inconsistency, by the way.
Hey, what's up? This is Black Thought, and you are now rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast.
Yo. This is Stretch Armstrong.
Ooh-wee! My name is Bobby DeGarcia, a.k.a. Cool Bob Love.
You're now listening to Crate 808.
Hey, yo, what up, y'all? This is Prince Paul, and you're rocking with Crate 808 Podcast.
Yo, it's Evie Evidence, Dilated Peoples. You're rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast, my favorite shit. Let's go.
Yo, what's going on, y'all? This is Master Ace from Brooklyn, New York, and you're checking out the Crate 808 Podcast, real hip hop.
Let's go into There Is a Dark Side then. 94, 2 years later, it comes out. Reggie's more on the boards here. You said there it follows on from this one. Does it even matter that there's growth? But is there any growth here for Redman as like a as an artist going into the second album?
Well, I was just saying that it followed the last record, because I want you to realize all three of these records, he creatively had continuity. He took the very last song from the first album and started it to be the second album before Dr. Travis's, you know, voice comes on and starts going into, we're going to change this up. It becomes like this psychotic journey through the mind of Redman. And I think we all, you know, see that. What was that? Bob Your Head to This. Oh my God. Starts off the actual album. And it's like, a sample of Fallen in Love, which, you know, if you guys remember, Downtown Science was the only group that did that way back when. But they sample that Science. And it just teleports you into like everything Reggie wants to talk about. He did most of this production you talked about, and it was brilliant that he started to cut ties from Eric Sermon, because it allowed him to become his own artist and open up the lane a little bit wider, which most people who are like a protege or someone who's like co-signed from really try to stay almost in the lane so they don't fall out. And, you know, again, second record gave you complete commercial successes. We had Can't Wait, Superman Lover, Tonight's the Night remix. But overall, the dark imagery of this record, not to mention the cover art. Dude, I still cannot pass electrical lines to this day and think Reggie's not underneath the ground somewhere. I mean, it's insane. So what a switch up. I love this equally, if not more, because there was more depth to him. So, I don't think we could all ever say that, you know, Dare is just not one of those genius masterworks, the same way, you know, the Beastie's Paul's Boutique was, but on a different level, you know what I mean? More of a psychological type of, you know, album, almost like a Hitchcock type, you know, darkness to it.
It gave me the vibe that he was like really doing hella drugs. Like
he was on his face
when he was doing
it. He said it on our show, and he was like pretty much locked into a room, and he just did drugs and he made music. And I think that's kind of why we like it. It's such a dark album. It's like the Empire Strikes Back of hip hop albums.
That is
that's perfect.
That is a great way.
And it's a sophomore album, so it's kind of fitting. But it's a very, very dark experimental album. Kind of like when I said he's kind of like the Hendrix of hip hop. I mean it. It's like his Are You Experienced album. This album is so dark, and lyrically, it's so genius. It's lyrically better than his debut. I mean, his debut, he said some funny shit, but This is kind of one of those albums where you rewind a lot of tracks. You're like, did he just say that? And you know what I'm saying? Like what we do with Doom and whatnot. Other than Can't Wait, I don't know how much commercial success it had. I know Andre said there was a few. Can't Wait, it was huge.
I just mean the vibe, the sound. Like it could be played in a club, something that wasn't like hardcore. It just had the samples were very vibey.
Mm. Yes.
You know what though? In 94, you could get away with that and make a real underground mean ass fucking album and do okay with it.
Like Headbanger. Like,
you didn't really have to do the whole radio thing because if it was Redman, he had that great first album. They're going to play the video on MTV Raps.
Rockefeller was the lead single off Rockefeller's, this album.
Yeah. You talk about drugs, the end of Rockefeller. What the fuck? Like he just like, where does bomb? Where is it? This whole moment, I was like, this guy's off his face. I love it. It's great.
It wasn't like he was smoking weed. He was doing like real heavy drugs at this time.
Shrooming it up a bit. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But I think he was in a zone. It made him better. Do you know another song that came out around this time that was not on this album? And if it was, it'd be even better. Is Funkarama.
Oh, off the Eric Sermon Insomnia, that one, yeah.
It was recorded around this time, and it should have been on this album. Can you imagine if it was on this album? I know they threw like Tonight the Night remix on here, but if you had that on this record,
damn,
you can't even. We wouldn't even have to sell it; it would sell itself.
I thought that was later. I didn't know it was this time. That's crazy.
Well, I believe that came out in 95, 96.
Oh, so he's probably
It was recorded around this time.
Wow. Did they also remaster what the album and put Hardcore on there? I think they did.
I think there was a...
They did, yeah. Track 23. Yeah, they did.
I want to say it was just his verse. Right. Wasn't the song.
Yeah, oh, no, right. Sorry. I'm looking. Oh, yeah. I got the enhanced CD where you get the videos. Remember those? Sorry. That's why I got, yep. I got that remastered version where I got the videos.
Jay, ones that would freeze up your computer when you stuck the CD-ROM in.
You put Mobb Deep for In the Long Run and your shit would be frozen. The CD-ROM would never work.
Yeah.
The Wu-Tang Chamber CD.
Oh, I love that. I love that so
fucking
much.
Fucking loud. They ruined like you're so playing many goddamn
Doom
computers.
With fucking RZA.
Yeah, the power down. We spent a pack of Bell.
That's superb. There are some I know we skipped this on the first album because we talked about a lot of the tracks there, but because these albums, like you said, not a lot of people talk. I mean, they do talk about it, they know about it, but what I want to know is there any kind of hidden gems on these albums, the first and this one, where you would say that deserves more love? Like is there any tracks that stand out to you now that you would say that?
I'm going to go with what Andre mentioned about Bob Your Head to this. The way that he comes in and the beat is just so, it thumps, dude. And then he's like, and I say, right about now, you are rocking with the best. Can I get a hit? Hit it. And then, you know, that's that red man there. That's the guy hyping him up. But he fucking comes in and just goes raw, dude.
Yeah.
The album is just fun. It's dark and fun. It's kind of like if like Dave Chappelle was in like Scream 2. I don't know if that's probably a shitty analogy, but
I like it.
It's like having a comedian in like a horror movie. You know what I mean? That's like Redman.
You go from Empire Strikes Back to Scream 2. Same fucking.
Aaron, you got a blaxploitation film you want to throw
this is
in?
Great. I can't top that. You just dropped the two perfect ones.
Wasn't there a song? I think it's called, is it The Journey? The Journey?
Yeah, The Journey. Yeah, yeah.
So what I loved about that one is it actually slowed the beat BPM wise slower than most that was going on at that time, because you got to remember in that part of the 90s people were dancing to a lot more of the hip-hop, even the rugged stuff, you know. But that one was slower and it was grimy and it was like the note on the bass kick was like turned down,
yeah,
so it was like a muddy and it was like haunting. And it was, that stuck out to me. Yeah.
I think this album really fit into 94 well. There was a lot of fucking hard underground records in 94. Smith & Wesson. Even shit like Diggable Planets. That album was dark.
Yeah.
The second one. I mean, everybody was kind of in a more of a underground zone at that time. And this totally fit that, I think.
It was Grave Diggers around that time. I can't remember my dates.
Grave Diggers was 94 as well. 94.
So this is that hardcore element that this isn't horrorcore, but this does definitely feel like someone who's kind of snapping a little bit. Like the first one has the mental asylum stuff, but this one sounds like he's genuinely a bit more just. And obviously he's off his face, as we said. So he obviously was going to be.
He's whacked. I mean, think about what he's saying. Like switching up speeds, riding a Fuji in a movie. How much drugs do you think it would take for you to even come out with those kind of, how does one even think of rhymes like that?
Yeah.
They need to make a game, 6 degrees of Red Man's Brain.
I just like his grunts, man. He's got great grunts.
I like how he rags on himself, like the two characters, and he's like, you know, the pussy you ate from that girl Jill last night. He's like, that shit's classic. Nobody does that.
You guys have interviewed a lot of different people with a lot of different opinions about records, but a lot of them are monotone on one level. Redman is a guy he's all over the place. He's up, he's down, he's in between, he's hiding behind something, he's in front. I mean, he's dynamic, man. So when you think of Redman Records, especially these three, you're talking about somebody who's reverberating in a very, very different way. And that is the difference. So even with a group like Tribe, as good as that is, we all, you know, would kind of agree that that's our three favorite. But if you really break down those Tribe records, especially 2 and 3, it kind of takes you on the journey of that lane. But this is all over the place, and you just don't know what you're going to get next.
You always feel good when you listen to Redman. You listen to Redman, you feel good. It makes you cheery.
Listen to Redman now, pal. And you get some.
It does. Makes you feel happy.
Go put them on repeat for the next 24 hours.
Scrape a little Red Man into a cigarette, brother. I think you need to.
You know, Cam, I think that's one of the things that separates Red Man from a lot of other artists is that he's so goddamn likable.
Yeah.
You know, he's a guy you root for, a guy you want to hang out with and smoke with or drink with and just chill with. He has that. It's like an infectious energy that he has with him. And look, we all love Cube, but Cube ain't the most likable guy these days. You know what I'm saying? But if you see Redman, you're like, oh, Redman, what up? And he is as cool in person or, you know, as he is on record. And I think just because he's so likable and he has this charisma about him that just sucks you in, you enjoy his music even more.
Mm-hmm. He must have talked to everybody that he ran into on his way to pick up his takeout food during our interview.
Oh, man, I need to.
he had a full-blown conversation with the lady working the register. He was talking to Mo making the fucking curly fries. You know, he was just talking to everybody. It was great. It was exactly how I would envision him to be off of his music. You know, when we had the interview, and then the fact that he took us on the road and picked up takeout food. And his interactions with everybody along the way, it was 110% Redman. And that's why I love the guy.
Yeah. I have to say, if no one's heard that episode, go to the vaults for these guys. Take It Personal Radio. That Redman episode is all time. Because I remember hearing that the week it dropped. I'm pretty sure it was the week it dropped. This guy can't be real. He's just gone to a Chinese takeaway. He's ordering food. You guys rode it so well. You were like, okay, we'll just go with this then. Like, let's go. And yeah, that journey. Yeah, man. So Kev, I appreciate you bringing that up because that's, again, one of the highlights. And it adds to that, as you said, character, but mythos around him as well. Like,
yes, yes, you're rocking with the best. This is the one and only Just Blaze. Right now, you're checking out the Crate 808 podcast. Remember to hit up crate808.com, like, comment, subscribe, and all of that. Peace.
I do think what we've said there about him being likable, we have to remember he became like a celebrity, he's on Christian Aguilera songs. You know, he's doing big films, and I don't know. And then he does MTV Cribs. And I think that all comes from this melting pot of music, but his charisma just transcends the albums. He becomes something completely different.
And don't gloss over the Cribs episode.
And just to kind of dip our toe into the water of Muddy Waters, that's kind of when everything kind of took off there, right? Because that's 1996 now, I believe, right?
Yeah, let's go,
So when him and Method Man have kind of forged their relationship and become like, you know, Meth and Red, right? They had a sitcom. They did a movie, I think. Like you said, they're doing stuff with Christina Aguilera. And it just takes on a whole...
Do you think they rode the train on Christina? Like maybe an Eiffel Tower?
God, I hope so.
Yeesh. It's 96 hip-hop. anything can happen.
You know she's getting dirty. She's getting dirty
somewhere too.
But yeah, expert analysis just.
I don't even think Christina was around in '96. I think.
Yeah, I think Dirty was a bit later. Yeah.
Are we talking about Muddy now? Or are we still talking about?
Well, I didn't want to jump to Muddy, but I'm saying like.
No, I'm just
what Cam was saying there about like you know. He became his own, he became a celebrity. And I think it all kind of started from Muddy Waters, right? Mm. And the peeps who jumped on the Redman train then, well, I hope they did their homework and went back because as we just talked about those last two albums, they're fantastic. They're classics, right? And I hope people just didn't get on the ride and go forward and not go back to where it all came from. I had a little homework to do myself, right? I didn't listen to all the EPMD albums quite as much back in the day. I really got into hip hop maybe like 1993, right? 93, 94. I was in the deep end by 94. You know, I did my homework. I went back and thank God I did, right?
Yeah, man. If we're talking there about his albums, and you guys have said Dark Side's like number one for you guys, but if you were to rank his like discography generally, maybe we don't talk about Malpractice, but generally, well, how would the others fall? Dark Side's number one. What are you going for number two and three?
First albums, I would say definitely falls because those were monumental tracks.
Yeah,
you know, you can't rule out what, even though Dare is a completely different experience. What really has the motivators of a Redman album?
Yeah,
you know, those songs are still. I could put those things on in a nightclub anywhere. And you're going after that. You really can't do that with Dare. Dare's something that you put on with your headphones and you just kind of say, wow, I never really remember that element. I don't remember having this experience. So it changes every year, you know, depending on where you're at in life. If you go into what really should be the next one, I mean, I really do believe it's Muddy because Muddy Waters has this commercial sound and it was Eric Sermon at his absolute finest. You got to remember, he was cranking out so much music out of Atlanta at the time. He moved there. Not many people knew that, but he was cranking out so much commercial successful music that it was a perfect, perfect, perfect musical record. You could actually take Redman off of it and say anyone can rhyme over this album. And it was that damn good. I mean, musically, it was fantastic.
Yeah.
I think once you get into the 2000s, it's really kind of forgettable. I hate to say that because I hold him in such high regard.
Right.
Like after Doxoname, I kind of like, all right.
Yeah, Doxoname wasn't that bad though. It was,
I liked some
pretty good.
No, but I'm saying after that, then it became like Malpractice. And then I think he had some obligations to Def Jam. So it was like Red Gone Wild and a few other ones. I didn't love them. And I don't think any of us have gone back and listened to those albums in the decade or two that it's come out. I would say Dare's one, What would be two, Muddy Waters would be three.
Definitely.
After that, it would probably be Doxoname is like his fourth best album. But
I mean, you could even just throw in Blackout, right? Because technically, that's
that was good.
Now you're really throwing Blackout because of Rock Wild production. I mean, at that time, that dude was
unreal,
unreal.
Yeah,
unreal. Perfect.
Yeah, that album. I love that album. It got a lot of, well, not a lot of hate, but people weren't really enjoying it that much. And I played it. For this episode, I was just rinsing it for this, and I was like, still bangs. This still knocks. I really enjoyed it. I still really enjoy that album.
What was the last Wu-Tang album called? Because I think Redman had the best shit on it, right?
He did.
Oh, yeah.
I think we told him that, didn't we, on the show?
out of that interview, by the way, just before we go into Muddy Waters, like when you linked that up with him, first of all, what were you expecting? And then after that, what are the other memorable interviews people should go out and listen to you guys? Because let's break out before Muddy Waters. I just wonder if there was any others. But before you got Redman, you must be pretty hyped.
Yeah, I think we were all geeked about it. And I think typically after like we do a really good interview, we're floating on cloud nine. We'll drink, we'll smoke cigarettes, or not cigarettes, I'm cigars. Kev will smoke cigarettes. We'll celebrate. I mean, because it was like, wow, we spoke to one of our heroes. Like many of us grew up listening to a KRS-One. So to speak to him for a few hours is, you know, you never imagine you would get to have that experience. So by the way, KRS-One's probably another interview of ours that I think
absolutely
is something that someone should listen to.
In a little hip hop folklore for our show, we had KRS-One and a follow-up interview that same night, which was
Pete Rock.
Oh my God.
We got to interview two night. Legends back to back.
Yeah.
I think we all looked at each other like, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah.
And this wasn't supposed to happen.
We peaked early.
With Redman, I feel like We got lucky in that, you know, you knew it was going to be wild. We knew it was going to be wild. Red Man's wild. But the dude was gracious. And he was the kind of dude that you want to hang out with. He might be a little nervous, like some shit's going to pop off. But he was the kind of dude that you want to hang out with. And he really came across that way in the interview. It was like he wanted to be there. Sometimes when you interview folks like this, you got to pull it out of them. They don't necessarily want to be there. You know what I mean? But he wanted to be there. He wanted to be there, as did KRS-One, which is why we think that's another one of our greatest interviews.
Yeah.
Because he totally wanted to be there. The man was gracious. He went into full detail beyond what we expected on everything we asked him. And Redman really did the same thing and also gave us the
personal, the
oh shit moments that we were looking for with the comedy and so forth.
Yeah. But
our permanent interviews, because speaking of Redman, is actually really good too, I think. You know, for those that aren't familiar with the show, the Eric Sermon interview. Here's a guy who has stories for days and is like a hidden gem. It's Bones Malone. And that was an interview we conducted years and years ago on a Prodigy tribute show with Premier, Mayhem Loren, and a few other guys. Bones Malone, we have it on the site, takeitpersonalradio.com. The guy has the greatest stories when it comes to hip hop.
Okay. So
he's actually been everywhere at the moments that the greatest things in hip hop have actually happened.
Wow.
So he's the type of guy who was on the roof fighting who's going to get Biggie, you know, which record label, and who lost over a dice game or a card game. You know, what? He'll give you the real deal. Listen to that interview. You'll really, like, you know, scratch your head like, wow, this shit really went on.
That's it, man. That's 90s. I love that. It's just crazy.
Yo, what up, y'all? This is DJ Premier, and you're checking out the Crates 808 podcast. I put an S on it because there's more than one record in the crate, you know what I'm saying? So that's how we dig, that's how we play, and that's what real DJs do. You heard? That's why it goes down. We out here.
So, okay, Muddy Waters, going in, how's it different to the first two? Where's he going? Like, where's he going with this album, and how do you guys feel about it then? And now?
Well, it's not a dark album, and it's not a P-Funk influenced album. Eric Sermon kind of took over the reins again of production, which produced his some of his biggest hits. Pick It Up, Whatever Man, both Eric Sermon joints. I'm trying to think what else was there off this album.
Whatever Man was huge. I think It's Like That, My Brother was like...
Rock the Spot was good.
Rock the Spot was super good.
The joint that samples Beanie Man and Clones. It samples the Clones, the Roots.
Oh, might be the Bump. Yeah, that's got a real Death Squad sound to it, the Bump, if I remember correctly.
This is my second favorite of the album because it had bounce. The other two were all, you know, the funk, the P-funk, and that's fine and everything. But for personal, you know, what we personally look for in records, I like the head knock, the bounce. I want bouncy shit. And I get a little bored when songs sound too similar. Yeah. So this was my second favorite Redman. I actually like What the Album the best, strictly off of impact and it meeting my expectations and exceeding them, actually, after hearing Hardcore. Because at the moment in time, that shit sounded so good. And it was exactly what you wanted. Like, you were not disappointed. The only thing about Redman, if I had to point out anything negative, and personal opinion, I'm not a huge skit fan. I would ditch all skits, although his are funny, and I give him that.
Yeah.
And some of the albums are too long for me. I don't like 23 song albums.
Yeah, he does love to put a lot of tracks on there. But I think the skits were a bit different. I know what you mean. I can take or leave them, but N.I.N. and stuff like that, I'd never heard anything like that. It's just crazy. And yeah, I feel you on that. Would you say Muddy Waters is Redman's apex? Is that the apex of his career? No.
No way.
No way.
And I still think Redman has more to give. He just has to align himself properly. He is kind of, I'm not going to say that he's lost at this point, but he is trying to merge forward as an artist independently, where he had so many people in his camp and in his crew. The truth is, if Eric Sermon did a record today with Redman, it would be on everybody's number one. I'm telling you, because they both know each other so well. And that's the beauty about hip hop is you can come back and be reintroduced to somebody at a different time in life and be susceptible to really understanding what you couldn't understand when you were younger. And I just think the two of them, Eric Sermon knows how to make a record and Redman knows how to rap his ass off. I mean, I still think he's one of the top linguistically. He's that talented. So his best record is possibly what could happen in the future if he's smart. But he needs the right person pointing him in the right direction.
See, I don't believe that. I think, let's talk about soccer. You could take two of the greatest soccer players, but when you put them 20 years out of their prime, as good as they were, they're not going to recreate the magic. Things have changed. Eric Sermon's production these days is a lot different than what it was on, say, Business as Usual, or even on Muddy Waters. You know, he dropped an album last year, Verona, I think. Are we talking about it? Are we listening to it still? No,
he just panned it, man.
So my point is, so even though he has a name, credibility, history, longevity, does not mean they're going to recreate the magic. So I think, to answer your question, is this his magnum opus? No, I want to say it's probably Dare, but I think this was the cherry on top, which solidifies the three-run album that you are putting us up to the task of saying who had the best. Yeah, I think this is it, because this album is so good. It's as good as What or Dare, if you will. And I think the other three albums, the third album of everybody else, is not as good as this.
Right.
And I think that's what separates Red Band in this discussion.
And Jay, you got to remember, the first one was rugged. The second one was dark. The third one was smooth. Mm. I mean, if you really listen, the first track sets it off. Is He For Real? Really smooth, man. Sermon at his best. And you got to remember, he was hitting on all cylinders off this third record. And Smoke Buddha, Whatever Man. I mean, these are some of the hardest, tracks. And guys, I know I always throw a Mantronics reference in, but the fact that it's like that, samples Cole Getting Dumb off of, Just Ice back in the day, kind of makes me really love that one best on this record. So overall, that's kind of what I see with all three records. They showcase different styles. They consistently had commercial and like rugged hits, and they all had like different multitudes of hip hop elements in it. You know, he never stopped putting scratches in records. You know, a lot of people drop the DJ and it becomes all about, the chorus and, as Kev said, the jingle jangle bullshit sometimes. And it just didn't have any gimmicks. He was straight up. The three records that were all strong, and he never stayed like level. He was always bouncing up and down to different characters, personalities, and that's what makes him so dynamic.
I would put him above Cube.
Ooh.
I would put this run over Cube if you're putting Predator in there, because
correct,
these three albums are rock solid through and through, and Predator is it's okay.
Yeah,
it's not on the level of any one of these three. Now the first two, fucking forget about it. But if you're not gonna count Kill at Will, and we're gonna go Predator, then Redman wins.
Damn. Just to give you a heads up, Predator is my favorite Cube album. So I know everyone's been like, yeah, I'm not sure about that, but that's my shit. Like, all of that is my shit. But that again is because I love Muggs, I think, so much that at that time Muggs was like probably my favorite producer. So yeah, but yeah, sorry,
man. Great album. It's a great album.
But I do feel what you're saying about consistency, because the first two of Cube are so big, and I get that. Like, essentially what you said there about like Dare is being his apex, his magnus opus. Do you think, outside of this conversation, people feel that? Because everyone I talk to when it comes to Redman, almost all of them talk about Muddy Waters first. It seems to be like
I don't know this to be the case, but it could be an age thing of when people first were exposed. So a lot of people were exposed to Redman because of Method Man and that whole, Def Jam marketing machine that was around them during that time. So Method Man essentially made Redman a better lyricist.
Yes.
That's possible. Like, they challenged one another.
Well,
and
vice versa.
And I think
Redman made Method Man a better lyricist
as well. I think they both challenged one another, but I think people's exposure to Redman may have come courtesy of Method Man, which is why they went to Muddy Waters first versus going to the earlier material, like What and Dare's a Dark Side. And Dare's a Dark Side, if you don't know Redman, if you listen to it, you'll be like, what the fuck is this?
Right.
It's not like Beginning Redman 101. You don't want that album.
Right.
Like, you want fun, loving, we got the fucking weed box above his refrigerator and the ones Redman. And that's really on Muddy Waters. Like, that's the guy you have fun with. That's the guy who could kick a rhyme better than anybody and make you laugh while he's doing it.
When you start dropping acid and eating mushrooms, that's when you want There Is a Dark Side.
But you got to remember, a hip hop audience.
You want to smoke weed to Muddy Waters, and you want to really fucking trip out to There Is a Dark Side.
Let's equate all of them to just drugs. Yeah. It's great. Yeah. What? You just need some whiskey. I think what would go really well, whiskey.
Drink to what? You know, especially when Time for Some Action comes on, and if you're like not getting any pussy that night, you're going to get angry and you're going to start fucking throwing fists, you know, that type of shit.
But yeah. That's really the hip hop listener. They want that kind of aggression. They want that. Yeah. So to sit down with headphones and really feel the magnum opus of There Is a Dark Side is not going to happen. You need a very experienced ear who's been through the journey of hip hop. It's age, as Jay said. There's so many layers to it. But like Paul's Boutique and other classic albums that have gone through, they'll last the test of time, because 20, 30 years later, you could say, God, what was this? Like, where was this guy? And so when you try to, like, you know, extract these little elements to bring you back to why you love hip hop, because things may take you out of it, you know, current music exactly. But, you know, you may say, like, wow, why wasn't I on this at that time? And that actually makes the record better.
Yeah. I just thought that, like, you were talking about meth and him, and really interesting how they did. You're right. It's so true. They made each other better. One thing I was thinking, if you made a Blackout 3 and just took bits of their solo albums together and just made Blackout 3, I think a lot of Tikal and a lot of Dare would just complement each other brilliantly, because I think that sound was just uniquely theirs, and they never went back to it. I don't feel they went back to it, and it kind of crystallized that moment for me.
I'm still waiting for a good solo Method Man album.
Hey, amen to that. I thought Tikal was hugely disappointing, man.
Oh,
he doesn't curse anymore.
I like Bring the Pain, and that was fucking it.
Really? Sandman?
Tikal's good. It's not great. It's good.
Oh, I bumped Tikal still.
I would love a 4.5-5 mic Method Man album, dude. It would be amazing, but we never got it.
You need a wall of filters to make
it could have happened.
You need a wall of filters to make that Method Man album sound good. It is so dirty and underproduced.
It is. Do you think that might be for the flood, though? That flood, I don't know. You keep hearing these stories, what was in the flood. I wonder if there's those meth
you know, lost. Flood, earthquake, tsunami. I think it was a rushed album because they wanted to truly capitalize on the success that Method Man was having. Yeah. And they just put out an album really with no single. And that's why they had to do a remix of, you know, with Mary J, because it was not a commercial success for Def Jam. But let me ask you a question, Cam.
Go for it.
Tikal or The Predator?
Oh, Predator all day long. Okay. Predator bumps. And Tikal's different. It's like a punk album. Like, I don't know. It's just like, it feels like, again, there are some moments on there where I'll wild out and smash like stuff. But generally, it's more them albums where I feel like, I don't know, it just makes me feel like a moody teenager again. Whereas Predator makes me feel like, yeah, you can bump that in the whip and you're like, fucking go for it. So yeah, I'm going there, man. You were talking there about meth, but both of these guys, at this time as well, when you talk about Muddy Waters, I don't know if it's just before or after, but he's on All Eyes on Me at this point. He's doing 4-3-2-1. His features, like Red is, if he's not the best man on it, he's definitely holding his own, I would say, at this time in his life, in his career.
96 and 97, Redman had some of the greatest features. You mentioned all of them. What about the Lost Boys joint?
Oh, yeah.
You know? Redman and Rascast, to me, had like the best features in that 2-year run, 96, 97.
His best feature ever was the song with MC8 and Spice One.
That was 94, actually. But yeah, Nothing But the Gangster.
We Come Strapped. Yeah, Nothing But the Gangster. And that's what I always loved about Redman, too, is that he never got himself caught up in all the East-West bullshit. He always just wanted to rap and have a good time. You know, that's what I look at that guy, and that's what I think. He just wants to rap and have a good time. I mean, how do you fucking not like that? And yeah, Nothing But the Gangster, he steals the show. Oh my God, I destroy cities like the Blob. Like, you know.
That's awesome. Did he talk about that on the Drink Champs pod or episode where he was talking about the East Coast, West Coast? And Noriega was like, when you featured on Got My Mind Made Up, we in New York were all like, holy shit, who's this guy with? Is he, for a week, they all had no idea, Red and Meth, are you against the East or what? Because it was so up in the air. And Red on that episode is just sort of kind of like, really? I didn't notice any of that. I think he's just like, you know, he's just doing his thing.
Smart. Red is, I think he's just his own person. He doesn't align with any kind of like ideology or coast. He just does whatever he fucking wants to do. And he's a free spirit. And I think it comes out in his music. And that's why people on the West like him. That's why people like the Loonies reach out to do collaborations. And like Kev said, MC8, because and Cypress Hill, by the way, let's not forget that Cypress Hill remix with 8 and Eric Sermon. He has this appeal to everybody because the first album, what'd you say, you can drink to?
Yeah.
The second album, you can probably snort to. The third album, you can smoke to. You know, he's that guy who's very relatable.
How high, all that stuff.
Wouldn't and bring guys, in the fact that he was sampling a lot of West Coast music. I mean, you really got to remember, it would be unwise to be choosing sides when people really thought maybe, hey, is this guy from LA? Is this guy from, you know, he was a part of that. So I think playing the center was the smartest thing. He was the hip hop's politician right there, playing the center.
Hey, yo, this your boy Pharrell March, and right now, you are rocking live with the Crate 808 Podcast. Enjoy this week's episode, and just remember to subscribe and rate and review. Peace.
What do you think, I was just going to say, where do you think it went wrong, though? Because here we are now, 2020. And, you know, Method Man and Wu-Tang and like that name and the marketing appeal behind it is still pretty strong, right? However, Redman, he was right there and he was getting the marketing appeal and the name and he was out there, but he just kind of took a step back into the shadows, I think. Do you think it's something that he did? Do you think it's something that the labels did? Like, where do you think that spotlight on Redman just kind of went dim and why?
That was going to be my exact question, Kev. So big up, man. That was actually going to be like, where did it go? Where did it go?
Well, I think you can say that Def Jam slowly dissolved and became a big part of that.
Yeah. Well, I think what happened was you had guys like Ja Rule, you had guys like Jay-Z and DMX that really started becoming the face of Def Jam. So they kind of lost their way. They forgot who got them there, you know, who helped during the time, because really Redman was an intricate part in the 90s as far as keeping Def Jam relevant. But once the 2000s hit, all those guys, they weren't moving units. You know, Lior Cohen and Lowes, all those guys wanted to get people to sell platinum records. And there was only a few guys that could do it. Like I said, Ja Rule, DMX, Jay-Z. So I think that's kind of what happened. They overlooked their real talent. And they went to the hot hand. And then over time, you know, shit happens.
Yeah. How do you feel? Do you feel that maybe he also made a few duds that, you know, where he was trying to adapt?
Absolutely.
And what Def Jam was doing?
Trying to adapt. I think he tried to play that game. And look, you do have to adapt, but it wasn't what we were accustomed to when it came to Redman. You know, after the first three albums, we're selfish. We want our Redman, and it wasn't our Redman.
Yeah, you don't want to hear that other shit. You don't want that. You just get mad.
Yeah. Although I think he did Ooh with Della. He had highlights. He still
that was a great song.
Yeah, he did some bits where I was like again, stole that, I suppose. And this is the thing. I think with Red, it becomes that. Where do you see the thing I'm really interested in? Because I know hip hop's completely different now, but you can find like the essence of Mobb Deep. You can find the essence of Tribe. I was just going to ask you guys, where do you think like either Redman, if it's just his character or if it's his lyrical ability or his choice of samples, do you still see any remnants of it in hip hop today?
I would say you could hear a little bit of Redman in Action Bronson, I feel. Because Action Bronson can bring some comedy and some comic relief to his rhymes. And, you know, I think he's actually one of the guys nowadays who like I really kind of check for whenever he drops new shit, you know, like I'm always pretty pleased with his product that he puts out to the market. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a great shot.
I don't know if there's too much of that today. I know, you know, M was influenced by Redman, but as far as today's lyricists go, no, I think he's a one of one. I truly believe that.
And that's why I think this argument really stands some validity because there really isn't another red man. I don't think that you could find anyone who would want that, because with that is responsibility. You can't be a sucker on the mic, you know, and say, hey, you know, I'm influenced by red man. It just doesn't work that way. So, you know, he's just a genuine character on so many levels. And to say he's typecast is crazy, because he could really do anything. He can change his style up, and that's what's missing. And that's kind of why I think, you know, his 3-album run deserves some real, you know, credibility here. And I believe that he's going to win this one. I think, Cam, I think you're on the,
he's going to win. So how do we determine a winner? Do we have,
do you know what? I've had people ask this, and I was like, look, I can't be the judge and jury here, because I'll get absolutely just hung and quartered. But I was thinking I was going to put it out to the fans, man. At the end of all this, let's see what they say. They're usually right. Who knows, man? But there really isn't a right answer. It's more about like this guy, what you've said there is absolutely perfect. I was going to ask for like a 30-second conclusion, but I think you've kind of just give it there, which is like, he is a one of one. There's people like Buster, and I know there's these kind of comparisons between him and Buster and who bought the rah-rah shit first and all this stuff. But for me, they're quite different anyway. Red is so much more on this other weird, like, insane tip, whereas Buster's more about the world's going to end at some point. Believe me, it is going to end at some point. You know, that's essentially what he's been doing for 20 years, and he's right. But yeah, I mean, if out of that, unless you guys want to give a 30-second stab, if someone's got a 30-second conclusion, they want to do it, I can put the timer on.
I mean,
do the elevator speech, Gloss.
No, I mean, this is like the Lombardi speech. I don't know. I think it comes down to this. If you separate the groups, by the way, may I make a suggestion for part two of this little contest?
Yeah.
The first three Roots album.
100%.
Okay.
Yeah, man. I'm in. And I knew you were going to bring up Roots because of Philly, man. I thought Roots were going to come up, but yeah.
I think the first three albums, you have three classic consecutive classics.
I think you could do it with Common too.
Which Common? Starting from Resurrection?
I would say the first three, or
I was going to Resurrection.
Yeah, I thought it was dope. It had Beatnuts doing all, you know, half the production. If him and his boy from Chicago doing all the production, and in the early 90s, you know, that kind of style was like kind of Daz Effects, kind of outlandish, you know, doing all the kind of silly rhymes and shit like that. And that worked back in 1992.
Yeah.
But then Resurrection is an absolute gem, top 10 of all time. And then like Water for Chocolate, J Dilla.
Mm, Introspection for Life as well. Yeah. He has a run. He does.
You could probably argue that fourth album replacing the first one if you wanted to. I don't know. Either or, really.
Is Public Enemy on this?
This is 90s.
Yeah, because it was strictly 90s. We kind of, that's why De La Soul, we couldn't use 3 Feet High, even though it's a classic. You're like, you want to use that. But then De La were on a crazy run as well. And I would say those three albums are pretty amazing as well. So this is what I'm saying. I like how you put it into solos and groups. Because solos is really Cube's Pax thing. Yeah, I don't know, man. You talk about short times of albums dropping. Pac was on a massive, ridiculous, just output, like at that point in about 2-3 years. So yeah, thank you guys for bringing this argument though, because I feel like Red needed this. I feel like this podcast generally anyway needed more Red. So I'm glad we got to dive in there with it. Actually, I was going to ask you this as well for your pod. First of all, tell us where we can go check all that stuff out. And two, if you had a dream guest to come on your podcast, who would it be? I know you've just had Black Thought and that was like one of your bucket lists. But give us all your socials and stuff where we can find you. And then,
where can they hear us, Wade?
Almost all the streaming platforms that are available. So iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, Stitcher?
iHeartRadio,
Apple.
The easiest way is just to go to our website, takeapersonalradio.com. One-stop shop.
Nice. And what can we expect? Drop it down. Give us a little pitch to the listeners who may not have checked the show so far.
What can you expect? You could expect the greatest thing to happen to hip-hop radio since the early days of Stretch and Bob.
Oh, nice. The mixes are unreal, by the way. These guys are doing some tribute mixes out there that are just sick. The Doom one, as a Doom head. Yeah, I needed that in my life. So yeah.
You're going to find everyday dudes, like we're all sitting there having a listening session, talking shit, having some drinks, having some smokes, telling some crazy jokes.
It's some shit that everybody can relate to. Mm-hmm. If you like that 90s-centric sound and you're from that era, you'll totally relate and you'll feel like we're your friends.
Yeah, man. I love
that. As far as upcoming shows, there's great stuff that is coming up soon. I don't want to let the cat out of the bag, but there's some great, great, great shows in the next couple that are coming out. But dream guest, if I had my option, I would always love to interview Chuck D. Chuck is one of the few rare, godfathers of hip hop. And to be quite honest, there's just something about Chuck. He really is the voice on so many levels. And it's just something that it would have always been an honor to interview somebody who's made such an impact on me, on so many people, socially, politically, and emotionally. And Chuck is just that guy.
Yeah, Chuck would be amazing. Love that, boys. Well, thank you again for bringing this argument. I hope that we can jump in again at some point and talk more 90s.
Definitely. You'll have to come on our show. We could pick your brain.
I'd love to, man. Definitely. But yeah, I mean, it just leaves me with the last thing that... Do you know what? I didn't even ask you at the beginning of this show that I asked
every... The least hip-hop thing we've done.
Yeah, I've only just remembered it just now, like an hour and a bit in. I'm really sorry. I apologize to everyone who's been waiting for that question. But before we do end then, two things. One, what's the least hip-hop thing you've done in the last 24 hours, guys? And... then we'll talk about what the last great thing is you heard. But let's see what the least hip-hop thing is.
Kevin. All right, I'll start. So I got two girls, and we just got them a puppy, little chihuahua, and it's a female puppy. And I got two girls, and they like the color pink. So the puppy's got a pink collar, and it's getting a little chilly up here because I'm in northern Georgia, and I had to go on a road trip up to North Carolina over the weekend. So we got a little sweater puppy. And of course, the sweater is fucking pink. So the puppy came on the road trip with us, and here I am at all the rest stops on the car trip, walking the dog in this little pink sweater with a pink collar and a little tiny chihuahua, and I felt like the movie Legally Blonde. So that's the best thing I've done the last 24 hours.
That is good. You guys are going to have a lot to do to beat that. If Cameron had a dog in a pink sweater walking it, would that be, that would make it better? So you need to wait for Cameron to do that.
He would look a lot cooler doing it than I did, for sure.
I think he would pick purple.
Oh, yeah, boom. Purple. There you go. Yeah, he would. Any more?
Mine's actually similar. I mean, my German Shepherd passed away last month.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
My wife was like, I think I need a dog still in the house. I wanted to take a break for a while to not wake up so early. So I follow around a Pomeranian Yorkie mix, which is 2-pound dog that fits in the size of my hand. Basically, I have to take it out every 2 hours, pick up its shit and pretend like I'm, still masculine and my balls haven't dropped. So kind of similar.
Oh, man.
I think Stretch had the best answer. He's like, well, ask me what I did that was hip hop.
Yeah.
Because it's true. Yeah. Once you reach a certain age, like what are you doing that's like hip hop?
Yeah, it's true.
You know,
it's true.
I'm going to go pick out some wallpaper. That's not hip hop. Like there's nothing I've done other than do this show that is remotely hip hop. So
that's a good point.
Agreed. Mine is last night, baked brownies with my 13-year-old.
Oh, that's nice though. That's nice.
I might have been loaded. Just saying.
What did you put in the brownies? That's the problem. Like, you know, you got to check on the kid just to make sure.
I may have eaten a different kind of brownie too, but you know, I helped bake the brownies.
You made the grown-up batch and the kid batch.
Slightly less dose in the kid batch, hopefully. So, love that, man. Okay, well, I'm glad that we got to that because I'm sorry if I forgot it. But last one before you guys do leave us, then the last great thing you guys heard can't be Redman, but it can be old, could be new, but just the last great song you heard.
Great song. It's not necessarily a song, but I'm really digging the new Benny album.
Oh, nice. Yeah, for sure.
The last great album I heard is probably the new Buster.
Boom.
I like that album. I just got into the new Rock Marcy, but it's too new for me to really make that call. But I'm a Rock Marcy kind of.
Are we talking strictly new?
No, just it could be old, could be new. Just the last great thing, yeah.
I'm going to go off the wall here. I listen to a lot of music while I'm at the gym. And one of my favorites, and this was going to be my answer earlier on who would the dream interview, I'd say DJ Quick.
I was listening to the divorce song off of his, off of the Balance and Options album. And it's him and El DeBarge. That's a great fucking song. It's a great
record.
You
trying to tell us something?
It's a great record.
Is everything okay?
No, I'm not trying to tell you something at all. It's just a great record.
You still got that. You still got that couch in that bedroom.
I slept there a few times.
Yeah.
That album's great though.
For me, listen, I do so much listening of the mixes that we do. So I'm very, very burned out when it comes to listening to music.
Just say Mantronics. We're all waiting for it.
Funny enough that you say that. I just went to Best Buy before we did this interview, and I put on Spotify, and I put on the very first Just Ice album, which is basically produced by Mantronics.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, man, there's something about that electro hip hop and that 909 snap in the drums. I get fucking lost, man. I get lost. So it was, you know, listening to the first Just Ice album.
That's sick, man. That is sick. Well, man, I'm going to try to listen to all of them now, especially the DJ Quick. I don't think I've heard that. Well, I just don't remember that track. So I'm looking forward to going back to that.
Balance and Options is the album. Super good album. I want to say it's his fourth album.
Okay. Love this, man. It's what you get 90s head together. You get all this, all these gems. Love it. Well, guys, thank you very much. Redman great episode album. Done. Hopefully, we might do an IG live after this with some of you guys, maybe. We don't know. We might jump on there and talk a bit more Redman with the listeners. But for now, man, I'm going to catch you on the flip side. And, man, I'll just be tuning in and waiting for the next few mixes and with bated breath.
Thanks, Cam. I appreciate the invite. And hopefully, we maybe convince a few heads out there to check for Redman.
Who's a red man? What's a red man?
Boom, boom, boom.
Peace.
Peace.
Peace, brother.
Later, brother.